Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. This is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, July 27, 2011. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic oversight and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. You can also send us your email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Well, it looks like our guest is on the air already. Our guest this evening, folks, is going to be Trey Smith. Trey Smith is the author of Thieves, the book in which he talks about how he stole from Mike Murdoch, the televangelist. And we're going to get some insight into that. Let's see if we can get him on the line now.
Joe, I'm on with you at the moment, man.
Okay, Mike. Thank you very much, Trey. I called you Mike. Thank you very much, Trey. Trey, I'm going to ask you to excuse me a little bit this evening. I got out of surgery.
No, take your time. We'll stumble through it.
The reason why I
said... No, it sounds great, Joe. I'm thrilled to be on your program, man.
Great. Thank you. Well, I got out of surgery just 48 hours ago, and I'm stumbling through this. My wife is going to co-host with me to keep me honest because I'm still a little fuzzy in the head from all the medicine that they give you, and the surgery happened to be a lot more extensive than they expected. So, but here I am. Anyway, but it's a pleasure to have you on
our
show.
Well, hold your hand and walk you through it, man. Hit me with your best shot. What do you have for me? What question do you have?
Well, Trey, I guess a place to start with most interviews is if you can tell our listeners, because we're going to have callers. In fact, we have one round listening in who may want to have a question a little later on. If you can just tell us a little bit, who are you and what brought you to write this book?
Well, Thieves, the book Thieves is the true story of the Mike Murdoch safe robbery. And Mike Murdoch is a fundraiser for Benny Hinn. He's one of the wealthiest men in Christian television today, right now while we speak. And I grew up with his son, Jason Murdoch.
Right.
We went to Christ for the Nations together, and it was during that time that things became progressively darker. The closer that I got to his father, Mike Murdoch, the darker things got, and this led to a safe robbery and led to me running from a TV pastor in Mexico and some other places. But it was something, you know, this book had to be written. I mean, it's one of those things that never, you know, it just doesn't happen in normal people's lives. And it cost me about 13 years of mine. Now, I never went to prison, but I spent a lot of years, initially following the safe robbery, I took off. I went to Mexico, and I was evading confronting it, but Mike was having his own problems on his end of the fence that are, you know, some of which are covered in the book, some of which are you know, new developments that I didn't even know about until after Thieves came out.
I see.
For example, he had in the police report, he declared that he'd lost. I think he initially declared to investigators that he lost $125,000. He changed this number. You know, this number ranged from $125,000, but ultimately he would tell people that he had lost millions. On top of this, when investigators began asking him in the police report about the insurance collected on the losses, his attorneys got kind of kind of backed off. There's also in the police report some mention of a white powder found in Mike Murdoch's closet, and the word cocaine is used one time. So it's a TV minister. We're still trying to establish if that was actually cocaine that was in the closet or not. But, you know, there's surrounding Mike and all of these guys, really, in my opinion, Joe, living with it and growing up with it, you've got questionable issues surrounding everything. And you've got on one end of the fence this playboy, you know, lifestyle, but another side of it is very, very dark. And the closer you get to these guys, the darker and more hollow it becomes. And you feel that in Thieves. You literally walk through that to where you hit a breaking point with me in the story where you, some people tell me that they wanted him robbed. Go ahead. You were going to ask something?
Well, you know, this is very unusual, but we have a caller who wants to ask a question right up front. Do you mind taking a call this early in the interview?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Okay.
Hit me with it.
Why don't we try this? Let's see if we can get them on the air. Caller, this would be area code 918-378. You're on the air. Your first name, please, and your question or comment for us.
Hello. My name is Sarah, and I'm from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Sarah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hey, Sarah. How's it going?
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's very interesting. I'm a regular on the show, but my husband and I went to Christ for the Nations, and we actually knew Mike and Linda back in 73 when they came. We didn't know them, but they came to our ministry center in Germany. That was when I think he was like 30 or something.
That would have been a long time ago.
Yes, and but I had a situation where I found out my mother, who's on Social Security, was really feeling like she had to give that $58 blessing. So you know what I'm talking about? Where this?
I absolutely know what you're talking about. I know the whole history of that $58. But go ahead.
So she was scrounging to come up with that money every month from her Social Security, and I explained that it would be okay if she stopped that, but she was afraid that then she would be making a vow she made to God, which was really stressed that she shouldn't break that vow, or else, you know, you never know what happens if you break the vow, but if you keep doing that $58 blessing, then all these blessings will start coming.
That's
and
so
important.
What
I finally
you're saying here is the most important thing that people need to get through their head. Just keep going with this.
Well, my question is,
I'm listening to you.
Are there other people that
are you kidding? I get emails like this on a daily. People don't understand. This is what it is, and it is deliberate at the core of it. Now I don't know at this point. I can't tell you if Mike Murdoch started off bad or Benny Hinn or any of these other guys. People ask me that all day. They say, "Well, what are these guys' intentions?" I don't know what their intentions are. I don't know what they intend to do, but I know what they actually do. And I know that I've been there in the, you know, in the back rooms where it's giggled about, it's chuckled about how much we got this person for or that person for. And it's all fun and games and, you know, limos and jet planes until you're on the other side of the fence and you see the people and the brokenness of it. And yes, there are lots of people, and it's not just Mike Murdoch that does this and his $58 thing. It's the model that they do business creates this. And that's called seed faith. Well, now it's called prosperity gospel. This is, this began with, it began actually in the 1950s. And they would go from town to town. There was a man by, I'm going to go ahead and say his name on the air. I've got a document coming out that doesn't have names and stuff in it. So, Joe, you're getting a treat here. But the guy's name that started this, as I understand it, is named Eugene Ewing. This is a guy that you have not heard of before, probably. Most people listening haven't. And I hope this show gets downloaded and people listen to this. Eugene Ewing, his income last year, as I understand it, was roughly about $100 million from still doing ministry efforts. He began by doing tent meetings. They would go from town to town and city to city. And these were a hustle. They were a grift. It was a scam, or at least as I understand it, it was. one of the most famous incidents, one of them recorded by the Trinity Foundation, was Eugene Ewing. Apparently what he had done was he did a resurrection sequence where he brought a casket up to the front of the stage, and a woman, you know, was apparently resurrected back to life. This was so compelling that people in the news article were said to have fainted during this event. Now, it turned out later that they would report that the woman that came out of the casket was a prostitute that Ewing had been with the night before. Needless to say, what happened with Ewing was he began setting up money mailer programs. Now, years back, probably about 5 years ago, after the safe robbery happened, I had just seen Jason again. I was sitting with Linda Murdoch. She has a lake house now. She did at the time. And I was sitting out there with her on the patio. And she said to me, she said, you know, everything went wrong when the money mailer people came into the picture. And I never knew at that time what she meant when words like granddaddies of seed faith or fathers of prosperity gospel or the money mailer men meant. But she would say, she said on numerous occasions, I never saw the devil's head until the money mailer men came into the picture. I'm assuming to this day who she means by that would be Oral Roberts and Eugene Ewing. These two guys got together, excuse me, these two guys got together in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which would later come to be called the Christian Mecca. That was what it was dubbed when I was a kid growing up. And of course, during that same time period, Jim Baker was made out to be the bad guy, which he made some mistakes. There's no argument of that. But this was the time that Mike began taking success. And the way this success was gained was for any of them, whether you're, as I understand it, these are all just my opinions and perceptions based on what I've heard. You verify it on your own. They would do mail outs. And this was the first time when they began, when Eugene Ewing began doing the mail outs for Oral Roberts. This was pretty much the first time in human history that the word seed faith was being used in mass volumes across the United States. And average Americans, ordinary American citizens, were beginning to get letters in their mailboxes that used the very same Bible scriptures they were familiar with as children to solicit them for money. The idea that God needs your money. He's going to bless you, but it's going to cost you something. This is a complete shift from the original focus of the Pentecostal movement, which was, you know, for the, you know, the will of Christ. Are you there?
Yes, we're here. Listen, I'm here. Sarah,
are you guys,
Sarah, are you still there? Sarah, are you still there? Sarah?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah, you're listening to that.
Okay.
But anyhow, this is what has matured into what we've got today. And so it is, in a sense, what you read in Thieves, yeah, it's a sample of the way it is. Yes, it's dark. It's ugly. And but the men like Mike Murdoch, that mindset, the Murdoch mindset, or the mindset of these men, is generated 100% by greed. So arguing whether or not there's cocaine in the closet, or whether there's heroin, floating around Benny Hinn issues, or whether, you know, all of these are side effects. They're side effects of a core issue, which is greed and the pursuit of money. That's what it is. And now, not for everyone in Christian ministry, but under the model they have, which is the prosperity gospel model for the charismatics, you will always have the best hustlers on top. It's just a fact.
Right.
So when they do away with that, and it does, it hurts people, because people like your grandmother, your mother, all of our mothers and fathers, they want to believe and put their, these men are holding Bible scriptures and they're using them against faithful people. They're using the Bible as a weapon against good, honest Christians. And to some degree, and the idea is the more you give, the more God will bless you. And if you don't give, then God, obviously, he's not going to bless you because you weren't faithful. So, of course, people are susceptible to this. And I found that the people that give you know, the larger amounts, I mean, in terms of what they had, but people that were right, and they'll say, well, I gave everything, and there are lots of these. There are lots of these. I mean, there are sob stories that you couldn't imagine. You know, people that, you know, I mean, this lady over here, she might have only given 6,000, right? But if she was working at a 7-Eleven, Lord knows how long that 6,000 took for her to get. And that's not even worthy of a backroom chuckle about grabbing it.
Right.
I mean, that's not even, you know, that's not even a hotel room stay or jet fuel.
Yeah.
It's a problem. And when the church is God is greed, when the leadership of the church is God is greed, then it just follows suit that the leadership of our country is greed. And that the idea is we take as much as we can, we pray on the weak, we pray on the needy, we pray on those that are coming for hope and help. This doesn't have anywhere good to end when you begin pursuing it. And that's what you read in Thieves, is the epitome of it. And you end at the, you know, at the other end of the book, you go through all of these colorful and horrible and traumatic situations, you know, that all revolve around a TV pastor and, you know, and all of this, and you make it to the other side, and you to some degree, you want that innocence back that you began with at the beginning of the story, where here you were, and, you know, you had noble thoughts, and, you know, maybe this is, you know, about Jesus and loving the Lord, and you make it back to those, but you have to really, at least for my life, it took a very good drag through the dirt to get there.
Yeah.
And so that's what the book is.
Trey, I guess you do
and
a lot of you do
yeah, go
lot,
ahead.
You do a lot of rationalizing, don't you, during this period of time, while you're I guess you were not part of the ministry, but you were not accepting of the ministry either, were you?
I wasn't what now? Say it again.
You were not accepting of the ministry as well. I mean, you knew what was going on. While you were studying, were you not?
Well, sure. Yeah, I was. That's what disillusions you to the core, is that you're, you know, you've got on one end of the fence. You know, even there at Christ for the Nation, the kids want to be like Mike Murdoch, so they'll come and, you know, they'll want to talk to, you know, what's it like to be, you know, to be around a TV minister and this kind of, you know, to them, and in that scenario, he's like a rock star, right?
Right.
And then you're actually around the man, and this is, you know, I mean, this is, you know, sinister, and it's, you know, everything is slanted and got a manipulative edge to it, and you're caught between these two worlds. And so, of course, you know, the natural thing for the mind is to say, this is all, you know, I mean, this is, this is all pretty ugly.
Well, let me ask you this.
And so, you know, go ahead.
Trey, you're studying religious dogma. Basically, you're studying to become a minister yourself or a preacher, were you not? Back those days?
Me right now? Right now?
Now, how is it that you were studying one thing, which, you know, preached one end of the spectrum, and you were observing the entirely other end of the spectrum? How did you justify all that? I mean, I'm just trying to find out where your mind was. But when you said like a rock star, I can understand you're influenced. But were you influenced that much that you actually rationalized the situation, or what?
Well, if you're talking about the, you know, the when it made it to when I got to the safe robbery, when I actually committed the safe robbery, I think I was just ultimately broken, you know. And at the time, I was a stupid kid.
Okay.
So you know, you've got those two things combined, and it didn't end well.
Yeah.
But I believed, even then, going to Christ for the Nations, and even in the time that I was running, you know, that I was out in the desert and I was, you know, in these different places, man, I would scream out, you know, Lord, you know, is there really a God? Are you out there? How can you stand this? And, you know, following the, you know, the years after that safe robbery, of course, I used drugs there at Christ for the Nations. I used them even prior to that. And you get that in thieves. You know, this dabblesome rebellion turns to complete bleakness.
Right.
But there were certainly, times, I think it got to a point, and you feel that as you read Thieves, where it's just so dark and claustrophobic that that becomes the world, and you really are waiting for the windows to open again at the end, and air to come through, and there's such a relief to that.
All right, just hold on.
It's hard to believe that story is real, to be honest with you. I mean, I read it myself, and I say, wow, did I really? It's probably more emotional for me than it is an average reader, because I look at that book, and I say, my God, did all this really happen? And the truth of the matter is, Joe, that more of it happened than I could even cram into 340 pages.
Okay. Let's stop just for a second for station identification.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
This evening, ladies and gentlemen, we have Trey Smith, the author of Thieves. He actually stole Mike Murdoch's safe, the TV evangelist, and we're talking about TV evangelism. And the trials and tribulations he went through. We do invite you to call our toll-free number if you have any questions or comments, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Of course, your comments are always welcome to our email address, to comments at libertytalkradio.com. Now, you said that you served a certain amount of years in jail, like 10 years in jail, but not necessarily for
the safe. Go ahead and continue.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't mean to cast dispersions. I misunderstood then. Did you say you wrote this while you were in jail, this book?
Yes, I did. Now, I was in I was incarcerated on charges that were completely separate. In the course of Thieves, when I first went to Mexico, I didn't have any money. There wasn't $125,000. There certainly was not millions in that safe. In fact, I'm going to save what was actually in there. But I mean, that's the old kick in the jimmy. There was
right.
Mike did understand that safe would leave at some point, in my opinion.
Right.
But I was in the I was in the desert basically with nothing. I took off out there with a little red Toyota Tercel that I had, and I parked the car by some brushes. I was out there by what's known as Big Bend National Park, was where I crossed over. But I put the car out in an area that nobody could find it. Covered it with brush. Covered it with a tarp. I even took the back wheels off. And I went over there. The first little town that I went to was called Boquitas, and I stayed around Boquitas for a great amount of time. I started making trades with the Mexicans, and I would go in and out of Texas, and I would go in, and at this point, again, this is after a safe robbery. I think I'm on the run. I was going in and out of the United States and stealing things from stores like Walmart that those Mexicans needed.
I see.
And over time, and you actually read this in the book, this is about the last half of the book, I got better and better at doing this, to ultimately the point I was organizing these kind of things and delivering goods to all sorts of folks. There was a place called La Casita, which was in Colorado Springs, and this was a chain of Mexican restaurants. The ownership of those Mexican restaurants would buy baby diapers and Tide laundry detergent from me in bulk. And there were a lot of people that would steal this stuff, and then I would gather it together, in some cases, add little truckloads of Tide and baby diapers and deliver it to these stores. And, of course, there were investigators that were looking for me. And I remember one of these men who caught me, I talk to on a regular basis now. And I remember when he got me, he said, "I can't believe that it's, you know, that you're the guy that's been causing these problems." And I can't remember exactly what I said to him, but I mean, it was something to the effect of, I'm just ready for this to be done, whatever that takes.
Yeah, I guess.
And these men were willing. Go ahead.
I guess you get to a point where, you realize that you really don't want to pursue the manner of living in which you are, and you would prefer. And I've heard this before. I prefer to get caught and get it over with. Is that the way you felt?
Yeah. All of this, you know, the fascinating about it and the story is all of this actually does start in the, you know, in the company, you know, all of it really starts in the company of a TV pastor. Not that, you know, these were all my choices,
yeah.
And I'm not a victim of Mike Murdoch, but it is true that a lot of my judgments were based on the way that he did things. And, I observed him as kind of a model of, maybe that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have jet planes, and you're supposed to have, you rape, rob, and steal to get whatever you've got to get, and it doesn't matter what the cost is to anybody else, you do it.
But how did you justify
that? Yeah,
how did you reconcile that with the teachings of the church or the Bible, and then pursue a totally different course of action? How did you reconcile that? It seems so bifurcated in itself. I'm having difficulty imagining the mindset at the time.
The time of the safe robbery?
No, the time of you studying to be in the ministry and yet observing. Were
it's
you studying to be in
well,
the ministry?
I mean, I don't know, man. I guess like anybody, you just, you've got the cards that you're dealt and you deal with it, you know? And, I was, a kid at the time and in my mind, maybe maybe there is a God, I don't know. I'm just growing up. I grew up believing that there was, and, but on the other end of the fence, when you get over to the leadership of, what you see, the pristine ivory towers of Christianity, you're saying to yourself, well, this is, none of this is real. And that's when the hopelessness really comes inside of you or came inside of me, to the point where there's screw it. I don't care. None of this is real.
Right.
And
Trent, may I ask you
I'm going to do what I've got to do. Go ahead.
May I interrupt here? Trey, this is Aaron. I'm Joe's wife. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I wondered...
Yeah, I'm here.
I wondered what Mr. Murdoch's response was at the time when he realized that you had taken this physical safe from his possession. And did he realize that someone had just noticed that maybe his gains were somewhat ill-gotten, or what was his reaction?
Well, nobody knows exactly. What we do know is that he did contact law enforcement initially, and he filed a claim. It's my belief, personally, based on what was inside the safe, that he intended for Jason to, he believed that Jason would steal the safe, and it was kind of like a red herring, basically. Inside that closet where he had it was just surrounded by, he had four cabinets in there. He had one that had stamps, one that had coins, one that had jewelry, and the last one had pornography. So these are all similar in height. They're basically the same kind of cabinets. The only one that had locked drawers was the one with the porn in it. And when I say these were cabinets full of stuff, I mean, you could pull things out of there that would literally make, if you took one ring, right? I mean, you could take palmfuls out and it wouldn't be noticeable, wouldn't even make a dent out of a single drawer. But if you were to take one item down to a pawn shop, I promise you, the first thing the guy would think was that it was costume jewelry. Once he spent a couple of minutes with it, his hands would be shaking a little bit. I mean, it's that kind of intensity with the value of the things around us. That closet had three electronic doors leading to it that all had keypad entry systems to get past to get there. That's once you're on the property. These are three doors to get to from the downstairs, the house, of the mansion, the Hacienda de Paz proper, the house, to get upstairs to his bedroom requires three electronic doors to be open. Yes, he contacted investigators. I've got a copy of the police report, which was actually difficult to get. The Trinity Foundation guys got that for me. In the police report, it talks about the claim that he initially made, which was $125,000. But it goes on to have all of these concerning statements from the investigators where they're like, they're typing internal notes to each other. Like, we didn't inform anyone of the white powder in the closet. We're curious how Murdoch's people knew that there was a white powder there. They're asking about cocaine or something to that effect in the closet. There's something to do with cocaine in the closet. And so, I don't know if Mike was, in my opinion, Mike really never, I just never observed him treat Jason very well. And I believe in my heart of hearts, that there was a part of Mike that not only was going to, this is just my belief, it's just my opinion, let me state that clearly, but that he intended for Jason to get hurt over that issue.
Did this make a change?
Jason was, mind you, the first person that he, when the investigators, this is another point, when the investigators, apparently when they asked Mike who had done this, in the police report, it states that Mike listed his son as the only suspect.
Wow.
And it would be Jason who would tell them that it was me that did it.
Was there a change in Mr. Murdoch's, how he conducted his programs and his money drives after the fact of the burglary or the stealing of the safe?
I don't know about that. I mean, he's throughout his career, he's generally had, much like these prosperity guys, they generally have a sob story. So at one point, like the lady that was on the phone earlier, I mean, following Mike's divorce, the sob story was how the devil was attacking him and he had this horrible wife. And so there's always some kind of, although I don't have any shows where I can say, hey, here's Mike crying about how he lost a safe. I could rest assured he did that. That's kind of his MO. I can also tell you this, that since the book's release, what I've observed of him, initially was to bump the numbers. He generally asks for $58. He's kind of an incremental guy. He's trying to get small amounts, basically, on a consistent basis from a large volume of people. He did go after higher numbers for a period there. And I don't, I attribute that to some fears from the book. But,
Trey,
I don't know.
Why did you not... You knew what the score was. Why did you not take the route of just exposing to the world what you knew?
Well, I don't think I thought like that at the time. I mean, I don't think I thought like that at all at the time. I was, I had actually become very similar to Mike Murdoch.
Okay, I see. Okay, so really, maturing or growing up
really
in the ministry,
you
are not really maturing in the sense of spiritually within a church. You were maturing more in the shenanigans of the televangelist industry, and you were captivated.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right. I got you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But what was that? What was that one driving force? What was that? What one thing? I mean, you knew all this was rotten. Yet you accepted fraud. And don't get me wrong, I'm not casting dispersions or anything like that, because if I told you I led a pristine life when I was a teenager, nothing wrong, I'd be lying through my Italian teeth, you know. And there are things that I am so embarrassed about when I was young that I do not want to even admit to myself. And I'll be honest with you, that's the way I feel. So don't get me wrong. What I'm trying to find out is that at what point did you say, okay, enough is enough, or why did you steal the safe? Why didn't you just take maybe a few million bucks worth of jewelry or something, you know?
I don't know, because I figured exactly what, I mean, we had rocked that safe side to side so many times. Jason and I would go in that closet on the weekends, and you could rock it from side to side, and it felt like it was full of money. It had, there was clearly something shifting around in there. But you would just assume with, you know, all of that surrounding it, that the glory of God itself must surely rest inside that box.
Yeah.
You would think that that's the X that marks the spot.
Okay. So you thought this was it. I mean, by taking the safe.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely. I mean, it's okay. Gotta be, it's, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm with you now. I was a little off center for a second. That's interesting. Now, when you were very young, very young, how did you live? Where did you come from? I mean, were you born in the shadows of this church, or were you just a friend that just got sucked into the whole thing?
Well, kind of. Yeah, no, I knew Jason. Okay, when I grew up in Houston, Texas, and Jason was my best friend as far back as I can remember. We were little babies together, so. I don't remember anything. I don't even know what time period really it was that the Mike and Linda divorce happened, but I remember growing up there was always a lot of talk about that because my mother and his mother were best friends. And so, you know, Jason and I on several occasions, we went to Disneyland together, we went to Disney World together, we went to the same schools together, and in fact, for a lot of Jason's childhood, he lived at our house with us because, I don't know, they would have custody issues, and Linda would have this go on or that go on, and I won't go into that, but I mean, he lived with us. I mean, he was like a brother to me. He was an only child, and I was an only child.
All right. Were your parents cognizant of what was going on with the ministry, or did they think he was an upstanding, spiritual leader?
I knew what Mike was capable of, but I don't know, you know, how much I hadn't witnessed it with my own eyes. I would hear from Linda, you know, Mike's done this and Mike's done that, and some of this stuff was pretty dark.
Yeah.
And so this was the exposure that, on a few occasions I had with him. It's, you know, growing up as a child, he's glossed up and he's, you know, coming off whatever show he's doing or whatever.
Yeah.
But when I did up at Christ for the Nations, of course, this was personal interactions, you know, and I would see him and I was on that mansion estate would stay most weekends there.
Right. Yeah.
And... yeah, go ahead.
Well, was your family very wealthy? Did they have an estate also?
My family was all right. You know, I grew up okay.
Oh, okay.
And so it was that kind of a crowd.
Okay.
I guess,
so your whole family, your family was. Friendly or with the Murdochs, I guess, right, as well?
Well, I don't know, my mother was best friends with Linda. That's all I can say. I think
yeah.
that I there was a general conception when I was growing up, at least I felt this way, even with church members, that most people kind of felt dark about Mike. I mean, on a personal level, they would, you know, he's, this really is a man that sleeps behind three doors. He is an isolated dude.
Right.
And, so there's just stuff off about him. I don't think people vocalize that, but when you got close to him, there's something off there. You know, there's something not right with this. In fact, let me give you a common practical example of this.
Sure.
You'd think that Hacienda de Paz would be the most gorgeous place on, and it is, man. He's got his own zoo. Had a pet lion at one point. You got camels. You got all sorts of weird stuff wandering loose on this acreage, right? All of you got veterinarians that come in the mornings and tend to all this stuff. He put in speakers in the trees. I think there are actually 24 of them. I could be wrong on that, but there are a bunch of indoor, outdoor speakers. And he would play himself singing to himself, and he would wonder, it's the spookiest thing you ever saw. He'd wander out there and listen to him, just wander around and listen to himself sing.
That is strange, because most people, singers, TV talk show hosts, dislike immensely listening to their own voice, and I'm one of them. And I sang doo-wop back in the 50s, and I hated listening to my own voice. Isn't that strange? It's strange.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the kick. I don't know.
Yeah.
Excuse me. This is Sarah again. And I've actually been to several of his meetings, and even as recent as, like, 6 years ago. And he did talk about his zoo. And that he doesn't call it a zoo, but how he has all these different animals in his estate. And a lot of things that you're telling me are things that he openly tells people at the meetings. So
sure, he's arrogant about it. He's in fact, there's a clip of him that I used the other day that was him talking about having jet plane. You know, I wrote in my book that he had a jet plane. Yeah, he actually stares into the screen. He says, "I don't just have one jet plane; I've got three jet planes." None of this is it's actually not a giant secret. And who is it? The International the International Association for Christian Studies estimates that religious leaders are committing financial crimes of $90 million a day globally. So it's larger than just, Benny Hinn and some of these highlight guys. It's a big issue. But
well,
yeah, he does. He brags about it.
Did you get any threats or any of these televangelists saying things to you after you wrote the book? Have you gotten a response from them?
Well, they say that, I've had some of them write and say that they're, that I'm Satan. I've had them, I've had people say a slew of things that are not flattering. And, on the other end of the fence, I'm cautious about what I do and where I go. And mainly what I do is, this is what I do on the stage. And this is what I did 6 months ago when I started this. At the beginning of every day, I get up. I sit down and I pray and I say, "Lord, guide my footsteps today. And the words that I say, give me precision in the things that I say, the things that I think about, the places that I go, and the people that come in and out of my life." And that's what I do. And I believe in that, and I think that there is a protection inherent in that.
Yeah. So you're trying you're trying to write yourself.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're trying to write yourself, Trey. Is that my correct? And well, just hold on to that thought just for a second. And I think
go ahead.
We're past due for station identification.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective, not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, we're pleased to have with us this
political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable.
That's true.
Good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Oops, sorry about that. Folks, we have with us this evening Trey Smith, the author of Thieves. It's about the stealing of Mike Murdoch's safe, the televangelist, and something about the industry itself. And he's also giving us a little insight into himself as well. Please call with your questions, your comments, 888-773-4496. 888-773-4496. Of course, your comments are always welcome to comments at libertytalkradio.com. Well, what was the intent of writing this book?
Well, it number one, it's a story that needed to be told. But number two, it you know, like the gal that was just on a second ago, is something that affects. I don't know how deep the pit is, Joe. I mean, probably nobody knows the answer to that. But a lot of people have been very hurt financially because of these practices. And it is honestly, on a day-to-day basis, one of the things that gives me the motivation to talk on a show like yours is that it gives validation to them. That's, you know, what I find when, you know, these people write and they say, I lost this, I lost that, I gave this, I gave that. Somebody say, you don't have to do that. You are being hustled. And some of the people, let me say this too, Joe, some of the guys... I've met some events since putting this book out. I've met some people that, you know, that defend all to the hilt the prosperity gospel and the seed faith. They don't know the history of it like I do. But they'll defend it, and they've got good intentions, and they believe, Joe, what they and what many of them actually believe, and this doesn't include Mike, in my opinion. I think what he does is deliberate, and I was there. I'm qualified to give that opinion. But a lot of people have heard these seed faith messages, just like I did growing up. They see the results of it, that you're, you know, well, this guy has got zoos and planes, and so God wants me to do this. You know, it should be okay for me to tell this group of people, right, that I need their money when I have no intent to do any public work with it. I have no intent to produce anything with it. I have no intent to do anything but glorify myself by suctioning off of a bunch of people who are having to sacrifice what amounts to basic needs and occasional luxuries so that I can have these nice things. So for those people that have been giving out of Social Security checks, that have been giving out of what little bit that they have, right, to contribute to this, who have been injured by it because they want that blessing. I mean, damn it, Joe. I just want my blessing from the Lord. I just want to be faithful. I don't want to be found unfaithful over a matter of a couple of dollars. I'm willing to release my hand, just like Mike Murdoch said, just like Benny Hinn said, just like these men on TV said. I'll let it go. That money is not so important to me. I can do without some basic things so that I can give to the Lord. The problem is, when we get so... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we have another caller if you want to finish your thought. That's fine.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, take them.
All right, let's go. Caller, you're on the air or you're on a cell phone, so I don't know what your telephone number is or where you're calling from.
Okay, well, I'm calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, hey, man, what's up?
I'm just wondering, by the way, my name is Ivan, and I'm just calling to find out if you had any opportunity to do any crusades or at least attend crusades of Benny Hinn's.
I've learned more about Benny Hinn in the last 6 months than I ever knew. With the primary person in the book Thieves and the person that I know is Mike Murdoch. Benny Hinn, I'm not familiar with personally. I've got a lot of people write things about him. I don't know if they're true or not. To answer your question, no, I've not been to a Benny Hinn crusade.
Okay. Well, the reason why I was asking is because, you know, I came out of a Methodist background, and I totally left the church for many years, and I had a few things that happened to me that caused me to go back to the Lord. And so I got caught up in the charismatic, the word of faith, and all that. And so a friend of mine said, hey, let's go to this Benny Hinn crusade that took place in Oklahoma City about 6-7 years ago. And so I went there, and we just happened, you know, he was real bent on going in there and helping out. And I said, well, okay, hey, if it's the Lord's will, we'll do it. And so we managed to get in through the back doors, and we walked up to some of the staff, and we said, hey, is there anything that we can do? And they said, well, yeah, we're short a few volunteers. Put these badges on, and what we want you to do is we want you, when we open up the doors, we want you to help the elderly sit in the sections. And we said, okay, fine. So we did, before we did that, you know, we didn't get to meet Benny Hinn or his inner circle. We got to meet his outer circle, you know, his big, humongous bodyguards that he has and so forth.
Right.
And so in the process of doing this, whenever they finally opened up the doors to let people in, that was what really started opening my eyes, because they, down on the floor, that's the magic of TV, is that the TV, you get to see what they want you to see. And so I noticed that on the floor, right in front of the stage, they had that roped off, and they had the bodyguards right there. Well, that section is reserved for the big money givers. And then in the far back, where the lights don't shine and the lights are out, that is where the crippled people and the people that are in extreme physical need and have real bad health problems, they get brought in at the very last after all the people are seated. And so I told the Lord, I said, listen, Lord, I am truly seeking you. If this Benny Hinn, if what he does is, you know, he says touch and then people get slain in the spirit and all that happens, then, Lord, if this is really, really true, then let it happen. And so I kept my eyes open, and I just started noticing little, you know, little things that really raised red flags to me. And, you know, towards the very end, whenever he did that touch and, you know, nothing happened to me, and I'm looking down on the floor and, you know, I'm seeing everybody just wiped out except for a few people. And I'm looking around and there's very few people that are, I'm sorry, there's only a few people still standing. Everybody else is, you know, slain in the spirit. And then I noticed just out of clear blue, they started pulling these wheelchairs out that you can buy at like Walgreens or you know, some of these other places like that. They're real cheap wheelchairs, and they started putting them up on stage. And then Benny Hinn started saying, "Hey, listen, you see these wheelchairs? You see these crutches? These are from the people that got healed."
Wow.
And you start noticing the line that is for the people wanting to go up on stage to claim their healing. And then you notice they have to go through three or four people on the interview before they're even allowed up there.
Right.
And so for me, you know, if I read a book on, you know, Benny Hinn, I wouldn't believe it. The only way I would believe it is if I physically went there like I did and watched the activities that was taking place. I mean, it just broke my heart because I talked to lots of people that followed him 6-7
right.
places over the United States and said, hey, I believe my miracle's going to happen tonight.
Right.
Yeah, it's especially disheartening, man, when you got people that they've got a, you know, they've really got something in their body and the whole faith isn't going to make it to the thing that just gets me so hard and has for the past about 2 years, man. And, you know, I'm not a perfect guy, but I'm a guy that keeps working little by little at this, and I think it's the right thing to do. But I know this like I know it, that there is a God out there. And I it's against my beliefs to push that on anybody, but I believe that for myself. And I believe that people can be, that things can happen that you can't imagine. And the thing that men like Mike Murray, that what it did to me, is it immediately discredits and causes you to question every piece of it.
Right.
Because you see something disingenuous. And what I'd like to see, and I don't know that it all started with Benny Hinn. It may have started with integrity, and then you get into the dollar bills. I mean, that's kind of Linda's story, if you were to hear her tell it about how Mike started. I wasn't there, so I don't know, but I have a speculation that, you know, there's some integrity there, and then we start making compromises, and then the money starts coming to the picture, and pretty soon it's all just a manipulative mess. And that's where we're at. And I'm a guy that what I'd like to see, you know, beyond this thieves thing, are some genuine things. To get back to the genuine. This country was founded on people that were genuine, and we've got our we've got our hoaxes and we've got our showmen. Some of them are dirtier than other ones. There's some truth to that. Some people are just dirtier than other ones. But anybody that's got a smell to them just needs to get out of the picture, because there really is a God, and I can only imagine how disheartening this really is to him.
Yeah, Ivan, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it.
The deal is we live in a microwave society. We are so used to, hey, throw your dinner in the microwave, hit 3 minutes instantly.
Yep.
And so we carry on that mentality in everything else in our life.
Ivan, you're right, man. Ivan, I'd like to thank you very much for calling in. Enjoyed your comments very much. We only have about 3 more minutes to go on the air, so we're going to wrap up the program right now. So we do appreciate very much your calling in and sharing your comments with us.
All right. Good show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ivan. We have
Joe,
about...
I've enjoyed being on your show.
Oh, yeah, this has been great. You have 2 minutes. If you'd like to inform our audience as to your book, your website, where they can reach you or whatever, I'll give the next minute or two to you, okay?
Well, I appreciate everybody that buys a copy of Thieves. TreySmithBooks.com is one place to get it. You can get it from Amazon. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. It's Trey Smith Thieves. And this is the true story of the Mike Murdoch safe robbery. So that's what it is. And Joe, I've enjoyed being on your show, and I'd love to do this again if we get a chance to.
Oh yeah, please do, and stay in touch. And we enjoyed you as a guest. A fascinating story, absolutely fascinating. We really enjoy. We appreciate the fact that you're sharing your experience with us. Hopefully, it will help so many people out there.
I hope so too, Joe. I hope so too. God bless you, man. Are we?
Thank you so much.
Are we at the minute mark? Or?
Oh yeah, we're at the minute mark. Okay. Well,
okay.
Good night. And thank you very much.
Well, it's been a pleasure being on the show, and I'm so thankful to everybody out there that listened. And God bless, and have a great night.
Thank you very much, Trey. Bye bye now.
All right.
Boy, that is an interesting story. That is really interesting, and that is too loud. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Grant Shaker's Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Grant Shaker's Audiology is the family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.